6.5%, was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round-by-round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually by Anna Forsythe at A4Sy03, and we both come to you from the traditional and unceded territories of the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Musqueam, Kotze, Semiamu, and Kwinana First Nation. That from memory.
Yeah. Good job.
I had thought about this because it's something that's actually important, I feel, and it's not something that we hear about on a podcast done, and we probably should. Mm. But it is something I'm becoming more aware of. This being a day after Truth and Reconciliation Day here in Canada. And Anna and I had chatted about how we could find a way to provide some recognition to the not only the day, but really the lenses to which we podcast from.
Yeah, I think it's really important to think about that all the time, not just on Truth and Reconciliation Day, but all the time. I mean, almost every public event you go to in Canada, you will hear a land acknowledgement, but yeah, I think it's an important thing to be thinking about all the time, and sort of ways in which you can perform acts of reconciliation, whatever that might be, education or, some way of recognizing the pain and suffering that Indigenous people have gone through as part of residential school system and intergenerational trauma. I just came out of a film at VIFF called Wa Pa Ke, which is means tomorrow. So the idea is it's about hopefulness, but for the future. But really powerful, moving documentary. Of course, I had lots of testimony yesterday at the Grandview Park ceremony. I do think it's an important thing to think about all the time. And if you don't know whose land you're on, there's a website called Whose Land that you can find that out on, and continue to educate yourself.
Yeah. You know, and I think what's also important to understand is before reconciliation, there must be truth. Mm-hmm. And there are many truths that even I today still don't know, and I am still learning. But one of the things that I do want to stress is that when you hear a land acknowledgement, it is not, you know, part of a woke or liberal agenda. It's simply a recognition of a truth. You know, even if we were to go and use a Eurocentric way of thinking, many of the Indigenous peoples out west here had no treaty. Yeah. They simply had their land taken from them. And that's not to suggest that those who had treaties signed were given a fair shake. But this is a truth that not many people realize remains true as of today. So I feel it's important for us to acknowledge that they are both traditional lands, but unceded. There was absolutely no Eurocentric agreement reached to say, hey, can we have your land for this?
Yeah. It's there's a lot of truths, hard truths that need to be looked at before we move to reconciliation. But yeah, you can do both of those things yourself if you choose the path of education and reconciliation.
Yeah. And, you know, to that effect, we'll be talking a little bit about the game that the Vancouver Canucks played most recently on September 30th. And I felt that they, as an organization, have done an okay job I think there is room to improve, and maybe I'm being harsh. Maybe it is a good job at recognizing the partnership that can exist with the Indigenous peoples of the land, like specifically with the Vancouver Canucks. It's the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam First Nation. But in that preseason game, they also had a member of the Williams Lake Band, which I am at a loss of recognizing the proper name of, but it's also, I think, the Vancouver Canucks acknowledging that their region is more than just what we know as Metro Vancouver, but the entire province of British Columbia and beyond. And I feel that the team is doing more and more that it can to recognize that fact.
Yeah, I do think that they do a better job than a lot of places, mm-hmm. and they've been doing a better job than they used to. I think last year was the first time they used the word genocide, talking about residential schools, which that's what it was. It was a cultural genocide. It was, you know, thousands of people died in that horrific system. So I think that was really important. I think there's a lot more they can do. Specifically towards player education, because you do feel like, I mean, maybe we don't see it, but you do hope it goes beyond what we saw as to, mm-hmm. you know, just having Indigenous chief give a 2-minute talk.
In the dressing room.
Yeah, like, you know, non-Canadian players won't have grown up learning about anything to do with that. I'm not sure what's in the American school system about Native Americans, but... I do think that's important, and mm-hmm. so I do hope that's part of it too.
Yeah, I agree. Now, to the Vancouver Canucks preseason, halfway over, there have been cuts, some of which are surprising, others not so much. We plan on getting into all of that. We're also going to talk a little bit about what's been going on in the world of the WHL, because as is everything with hockey, every week is a new story, which has us wondering Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. But before we get to that, let's rewind. Since we last recorded an episode, the Vancouver Canucks have finally won a preseason game. They have not seen another team hang 10 on them, which is progress. The fact remains, though, that the Vancouver Canucks have shown an inconsistent effort, though I also have to remind myself it is only the preseason. This is where experimentation were to, you know, happen. They lost 2-1 to the Oilers. They lost 3-1 to the Kraken. They beat the Oilers here at home, their first home game in the preseason, 5-2. But if there's one thing that concerns me, and again, we're only halfway through, so there's still time for this to improve or change, is that for a team who arguably has depth, I mean, and that's for argument's sake, I would have liked to have seen more battle for those available spots. Like I had hoped to see some of the younger generation, or maybe the, you know, JAG generation, providing a little more bite to the game, a little more effort to what they're providing on the ice to show that a hard decision must be made. I don't feel hard decisions are being made right now.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. There wasn't someone that's just like, there was some promise at camp for sure, but there wasn't anyone once we got into preseason action where you're just like, this person didn't have a spot on the NHL lineup when we started this, but now they do. They have earned mm-hmm. themselves a spot. And there was some like people that you thought might get somewhere, maybe like Christian Wolanin, Akita Hirose, those kind of maybe tweener style players, Cole McWard. And a lot of these players got, you know, some ample opportunities, you know, playing with Quinn Hughes, etc. So,
mm-hmm.
We talked about Jet Wu in the 10-0 loss. So I do feel like he was maybe one of the first to sort of go in terms of, not ending up on the NHL roster, but I don't know if we ever thought he would. So, yeah.
You know,
guy's not quite fulfilling promise.
No, and to that effect, I mean, the announced changes to the roster so far. We are recording here on a Sunday evening. There were five players placed on waivers for the purposes of being designated to the Abbotsford Canucks. That happened to be Jet Wu, Matt Irwin, Sheldon Dreuze, Jack Rathbone, and Zach Sochenko. So all five of them must clear waivers and not be claimed like Spencer Martin was. Peace be with you, Spencer. To find their way to Abbotsford. Jet Wu is a name who has been synonymous with sort of Canucks camps for a number of seasons now and doesn't seem to have what it takes in his game to show that, hey, you gotta keep me to the final day. Jack Rathbone, another player that had high hopes placed upon him in the past, and again, not reaching that point. But, you know, those are just five names. There were three PTOs. Now, PTO is a little bit different simply because, one, the Canucks have no cap space. So they actually signed them to a contract. They'd have to make other adjustments, but Chase Wilders, Quinn Sheeman, and John Stevens, they're all back to their AHL contracts.
Yeah, and those are like Abbotsford guys through and through. Chase Wilders is the Abbotsford captain. Quinn Sheeman has been okay on Abbotsford, not outstanding. Like, and yeah, so, and John Stevens, like AHL legend John Stevens, I would say, but very much AHL, so they're more bodies in camp than anything else.
Yeah. Now, there is a chance those three could sign a contract elsewhere to get into the NHL, but the likelihood is that they are AHL bound. And if at some point down in the road, the Vancouver Canucks decide to use a contract spot on either of them or any of them, that could be determined. Other players, though, had been assigned to Abbotsford. Now, this is a group of players who don't have to clear waivers. They're, you know, driving down Highway 1. You got Danila Klimovic, Atu Ratu, Vasily Podkolzin, Max Sasson, Linus Karlsson, Arsh Baines, Tristan Nielsen, Josh Bloom, Aiden McDonough, Akita Hirose, Philip Johansson, and Nikita Topolyov. Any names on that longer list that you are surprised to see headed to Abbey so soon?
Well, I'll start with maybe the non-obvious one, and or maybe the two non-obvious ones, and maybe it's a bit unfair that we said that none of the sort of AHL or like tweener guys earned a spot, but like Artu Ratu and Archie Baines, I think, had pretty good preseasons. Artu Ratu was probably the only one in the 10-0 game that acquitted himself with any, maybe Nils Höglander as well. Any credit there. I think the Artu Ratu is definitely a call-up option. Archie Baines maybe also down the road. He's a little maybe down the lineup of call-ups, but yeah, I think Artu Ratu will see play some NHL games for sure this year. Yeah, any thoughts on either of those before we move to the elephant in the room?
No, I think you hit the nail square on the head. To me, it's the early part. Now, the Vancouver Canucks only have a handful of preseason games left, so if you're thinking that you're now really on it to solidify your lineup, okay, you make those adjustments. But again, back to my earlier point, if you have a team who's trying to create that level of competition, you know, maybe having the right conversation to motivate these players a little bit further to make a tougher decision could have happened. But again,
yeah,
off they go to Abbey. So, the elephant. There's an elephant in the room? Where's that elephant, you say?
I think there is a Russian elephant in the room in that Vasily Podkolzin is also headed to Abbotsford. We can't say we weren't warned. He's been called out by media. He's been called out by his head coach. Like, he's been... I'm sure that he's been called out by teammates and coaches in practice. Like, he wasn't playing well. Like, he wasn't being the player he could be. And it's safe to say, right, that he's not really a bottom of the lineup player, and maybe that's damaging as well to have him be that, so better he play in the AHL.
But also keep in mind, he doesn't have to clear waivers. Like, yeah. If you're feeling he ain't got it yet, you have zero risk. Well, okay, relative player transfer risk in having him go to Abbotsford. I mean, there's risk of development or that stagnating if the player doesn't buy into what the message happens to be that he's receiving.
Or, road traffic accidents on Highway 1.
Well, heaven forbid. Speaking of which, if you happen to live in British Columbia, make sure you have winter tires or endorsed snow tires on your vehicle. As of today, October 1st, it is against the law to be on BC highways without those winter endorsed tires. Back on point, though, do you think Pods has seen that ship sail? Someone who had been brought into the lineup and had been given everything to find himself... maybe take that a little too much for granted, which is a story we've seen from a few young players in recent history with the Vancouver Canucks.
I mean, I think that's valid that, yes, he maybe took his spot for granted. Do I think there's any kind of finality with this? Not at all. Like, I think he'll do well in AHL. And like we say, we have the luxury of it being Abbotsford and not... upstate New York.
It's so far away.
I mean, I think it's far away.
I mean, considering you think I live in an entirely different part of the world, Abbotsford must be a different planet to you.
I mean, it is to me.
Utica, like, Abbotsford, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Londoner. Anywhere north of the Chopland Court Road is the Midlands.
Which is still London?
Yeah, it's literally central London, but... yeah, it's really close. Like, I do think it's a kick up the butt, but they're not just doing it for the sake of kicking him up the butt. It's just like, wake up, you have a ways to go. You need to do the actual work in Abbotsford. Play those top line minutes, score, be defensively responsible, and prove you're better than the wingers that we have.
Which, in fairness, he hasn't done. And, I have seen a few people suggest, well, he's just not getting an opportunity. If you don't take the opportunity that's provided to you in the NHL, and he got one, he got a great one in his first season, and realize that opportunity could disappear, you got to learn to change your game real quick. You got to take those tough lessons. And again, you work so hard that you make it tough on the organization to keep you down. You don't make it as easy as a decision as it is halfway through camp. So I don't think the ship has sailed, to answer my earlier question. I think there is a future for Pod Colson in Vancouver, but that's not something that's just an automatic. He needs to prove that he belongs, and he needs to ultimately put the pressure on the team to get him into an NHL lineup.
I mean, go ahead. Finish your point.
Well, I mean, the price that he is currently paid, if he turns his game around, is phenomenal, and it frees up an opportunity to maybe make a deal that isn't the greatest value in a sense, but it allows the team to free up some very precious cap space that they absolutely need.
Yeah. And what I was just going to say, there's like the comparison here, Nils Höglander, right? You know, maybe we took him for granted, and maybe he took it for granted that he was an NHL player. Mm-hmm. And then last season showed that, no, that's not automatically the case. He went out to Abbotsford, worked extremely hard, definitely deserved a call-up last year, but not necessarily necessary for him to have a call-up, and I think he did benefit from spending a lot of time in Abbotsford. And now, like, he's earned his spot back. And I think, Paul Colson needs to prove himself in the same way.
Agree. Now, a neighbor of mine asked me this past week, hey, Chris, what do you think the Canucks' playoff chances are? And I answered quite honestly. I'm like, there might be an opportunity for them to be a playoff pretender. Maybe not a contender. And when I use the term contender, I'm not talking about a contender for the Canucks. I'm talking about a contender for the playoffs. The concern I have is the blue line. The Vancouver Canucks blue line has not really improved upon the blue line that we saw last season. Sure, you know, it'll be a good opportunity for Philip Ronick to prove me wrong to that point. And, well, Carson Soucy got brought in. Maybe there's the solution. But if you watch that game against Edmonton, you did notice that a certain player with a certain letter on their jersey determined for one reason or another to prove a point, scored a couple of goals. And in the rundown, just to pull the curtain back here a little bit, Anna writes, Quinn shooting more. Should we move him up to forward so he doesn't need a D partner? What the heck is defense anyway? And I think that that point goes to what I've always said. Score more goals than the other team does. It doesn't matter how many you let in.
Yeah, because let's be honest, both the Edmonton goals were really ugly goals to give up. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like everyone abandoned their assignments. Like, it was scramble defense. It was gross to see. I love good defense, so I am kind of different in that way. But who knows, if Quinn's just scoring all the time, then maybe we don't need to learn how to do that.
Sure. Okay. And let me rewind a little bit. I like the offense. I'm more of score more goals type idea. Give me the 80s style hockey. But I do like a defensively sound team, like a team that plays smart, that makes it tough on the opposition and capitalizes on those few opportunities or mistakes that they can generate. That's the other sort of slot two that I would look for. The Canucks aren't it though.
Serious question. When was the last time Canucks had a defensively sound team? And I don't mean necessarily a good team or a playoff team or anything, just any team, a team that you didn't constantly worry about the back
2012
end.
And technically the better team. Now there were, you know, signs of a defensive minded team during the early days of Travis Green.
Yeah,
but that wasn't this is where I think the struggle is, was it a defensively sound team? I don't know. But they were defensively minded, which when your entire roster is played that way, can help sort of fill in the cracks a little bit. But the converse to that is you're now not generating the offense that you need, you know. And there's the reason I say 2012 is that despite losing Erhoff, because that 2011 blue line was phenomenal, six ways to Sunday. 2012 was still a good blue line, but once things started to fall apart, They went from having, you know, six solid blue liners to five to four and suddenly two. And once it just became you had two solid defensemen and four, we hope they're healthy enough and stop enough shots to give us a chance.
Yeah. I'm just looking through like rosters from 2015 onwards and woof, the defense. Yeah, I didn't remember how bad it was, how thin it was. Because still, like, we have one of the best defensemen, one of the best players in the league on our defense now. But it's so thin.
Chris Tanev skating on one leg was the best defenseman. Yeah. And that's not a knock on Tanev.
Yeah.
I wish the Vancouver Canucks had found a way to keep him in the fold. Even to now, could you imagine Tanev as part of this like blue line and the leadership that he would provide? He might even have a C on his jersey, and that's not taken away from Quinn. Like, there, you know, if we were to go and look at that timeline, but yeah.
Oh yeah. Seriously. Like, I don't even know who you would say is the next best defenseman on that Canucks team, apart from an aging Alex Edler, I guess you would say.
Hey, there were some that suggested Edler would have been a good sign or good signing this past off season. And again, not to suggest like top tier, we're talking like a good, reliable veteran that can go and provide some leadership.
Honestly, the only way I'd be happy with that is if it was a Kevin Bieksa style. retire as a Canuck signing. And I'm sorry to Alex Edler, but...
Do you remember the stories that Edler would never leave Vancouver, and then he did?
Yeah.
So there's that. Before we we move on, Spencer Martin, we mentioned, claimed off the waiver wire. And I think it was Wags that shared on socials that if you consider how poor Spencer Martin's statistics were last season, that another team looked at him and said, yeah, we'd like that guy on our roster. That should tell you a lot of the blue line that was in front of him. And I think Wags hits the nail there because, you know, Martin, good, bad, or ugly, teams don't blame the guy in the net. Again, it's not just us podcasters and, you know, curmudgeonly, bloggers and stuff that are causing trouble. The league sort of agrees with us.
Yeah. I mean, I've always kind of liked Spencer Martin, as I like to call him because he has two first names. But yeah, that was rough. He didn't stand on his head to protect the net from... We've talked about it, terrible defense in front of him, but as a backup, I think he's a decent option. The Canucks just kind of made bets on, you know, Shelov and DeSmith. Like, they need an outstanding backup because they're realizing physically that Thatcher-Demko cannot cope with their workload that the Canucks want, like, realistically... Mm-hmm. Need to put on him. Like, they can't push him as far as they want to, and a playoff, you know, competition demands. They need some, like, pretty decent backup. Otherwise, they're just failing before they even get out the gate.
Agreed.
Yeah. And so best of luck to Spencer Martin, Spencer. And, yeah, at least don't have the coach in Columbus that you did a week ago or 2 weeks ago to cope with.
One final bit of Canucks news. Brandon Sutter, he had a professional tryout with the Edmonton Oilers. And word broke today that the Edmonton Oilers were releasing him from his professional tryout. And Mr. Sutter has elected to retire from the NHL. This is somewhat of a sad end to his career as a player who, going into the pandemic, had sort of an opportunity to continue his journeyman career, probably get many more seasons, but in fact got COVID and then suffered from the symptoms of long COVID, which... There is still very little known about the long-term impact of, but Brandon and everything that he had suffered and had to go through was something that he openly talked about. So that, you know, having this opportunity with the professional tryout with the Edmonton Oilers, I think it was the kick at the can to say, hey, is my body still capable of playing in this high-performance sport? And based on the results and the fact that he is elected to retire, at least it gave him closure to know, hey, I tried. It's just no longer possible. It's just what may have been for him had that not occurred.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad because I do think he, you know, came back from that terrible foundational tag that he got given. He got a cheaper contract and he was kind of playing to the right level for that contract. So we had a lot of promise to sort of keep going at that level. And yeah, unfortunately, with the health complications that he suffered, that wasn't really possible. And I do get it. I think as non-professional athletes, we're always going to have that thing of, well, you know, you're an ambassador for the team, for the Canucks. You were doing that kind of work and you were like... You thought he might have moved on sooner from the idea of playing professional hockey, but there's always going to be that drive in the athlete to just want to know for sure. They want to put everything out there and see if there's any small possibility of keeping going. They want to do that. So, I have a lot of respect for him. It seems like a lot of his Canucks teammates had a lot of respect for him and the way he conducted himself. So I hope he has a good retirement.
I agree. We're going to take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
If you happen to follow the WHL, or alternatively, you happen to be a member of C4 Discord, you'll know that the Red Deer Rebels announced a leadership group that includes an individual as captain who has a very checkered past, to say the least, in junior hockey. And I don't even know how to pronounce his last names, but Kai Uchaz.
Let's go for that.
If you have not heard of him, he happened to be accused of making some extremely racist statements to a player. And upon an investigation, was determined to have done so. His previous team suspended him. And ultimately, he was suspended from the league. But his rights were traded to Red Deer. Now, you might think, oh, well, racism, I mean, it's part of the culture, you know, this happens. First of all, there's no defense to racism. It should not happen. It is not a sports culture thing. Yet, if you take that lens and apply it and simply say, racism, there's different levels. It was to his own teammate, which doesn't excuse it, I think amplifies the problem. So how is it, Anna, that a player, a young player, can somehow become leadership material, having proven how opposite to what I think the definition of leadership would be? Like, how does that occur?
I mean, we've talked about this time and time again about what hockey, how hockey hands out second chances to people that haven't earned them. Yes, I mean, this player, whilst he was playing for Seattle, like a team that he was released from, removed from because of his behavior, like, it was repeated offenses. This was not a one-time thing. He was bullying his teammate, the lone player of color on the team, or lone black player, at least, on the team. Like, hockey is such a white sport. Like, it's... And the way it handles... people... the way it handles, like, itself in relation to people of color just means it's gonna stay that way. For anyone that hasn't seen the documentary Black Ice, one, I encourage you to do so. It's incredibly powerful, but there's, you know, a thread in that about a player of color, like, and his father, like, basically struggling against the WHL disciplinary committee, or whatever it may be called, just to deal with all the racist incidents that he's experienced. And this is a player that's mixed race, and he recognizes that his white father, who is his sole parent, just, like, is the only reason he's getting any attention whatsoever in relation to this incident. So yeah, it's mind-blowing, honestly, but one of those terrible but not surprising things, I guess.
Yeah, the thing about it being not surprising is that, is it? And I don't mean to take away from the fact that you and I both feel that hockey culture has so far to go to even be at a level of, you know, common decency. But you would think that something so egregious as this, like, we're not talking about a player who got a second chance to continue to play the game. We're not talking about a player not only got a second chance to play the game, but someone, a coach, the Red Deer Rebels, had thought, this is good leadership quality here. Really? Like, you were bullying your own teammate. You were a racist. It was surfaced by other members of the team. Like, if anything, the room turned against this guy. And if there's anything about hockey culture, when the room turns on you, you're not a leader. And here we are in Red Deer thinking that, one, this is a good idea, and two, making it happen. It just blows my mind. But then the WHL has also, you know, brought in a head coach who equally is a racist. So maybe it's a WHL thing.
Yeah, I mean, yes, Bill Peters is, as you say, like, he is, like, a Lethbridge Hurricanes, he's that coach, like, and he's, you know, there's been so much about his behavior towards Akeem Alou and, like, how he has never once apologized for that. There is a player, another coach that's currently under suspension. And the story goes that it is from using a racial slur. Like, I understand that these are different organizations among the league. They are not acting in concert with each other. But how can you be in this environment and think that this is an okay thing to say? But also, where is the WHL on this? Like,
silent.
Silent. Once again, Hockey Canada, silent. Like, they don't even have the decency to come out and say, like, justify whatever action this is. So,
yeah. So Brent Sutter, who happens to be the owner and GM, he has responded to the uproar to this announcement by saying, "With Kai, he has been a model citizen in our dressing room and community and is very well liked and respected by his teammates. He made a mistake a few years back and has owned that mistake fully. That is not lost on us. He was rightfully disciplined at the time by Seattle and worked hard both on a league-mandated program as well as on his own to better understand and learn from his actions." So it's interesting. He made a mistake. So what we're going to do is we're going to categorize a tenure of time as a mistake. Like, a mistake is, you said something and immediately regretted it. But hey, a mistake was made. You said it. But no, we're going to take this in period of time. That's a mistake. See that, you know, timeline? That's the mistake. And he owned it. I honestly don't know if he's owned it or not. I haven't heard anything about him owning it. I haven't heard him come out and publicly say, yeah, this is on me. This is what I did. Like, you need to accept what you have done and be honest about what it is that you did. I think that should be rule number one. And I don't know if that has happened. But like this is just hockey culture, you know, deflecting as it normally does.
Yeah. I mean, if he had changed, if he was this new person, like, why haven't we heard anything about it? Because part of being a captain, if he's a leader and well respected, then, like, why aren't we hearing anything about these changes that he has made to educate himself to never be that person again? The person that bullied his teammate, like, repeated incidents. Yeah. I mean, the fact that this player is still in the league is incredibly disappointing.
Yeah. Now, whether or not he goes beyond the WHL, who knows?
I mean, yes, he has been already been passed over in the NHL draft, so it would take quite a lot for him to be, you know, moving on to that. But, like, yeah, there are leagues in Europe, right? And there's lots of players that have been deemed undesirable by the NHL who have resurfaced in Europe.
Yeah. You know, on the other side of the spectrum, there are players who have been deemed undesirable to the NHL who, quite honestly, they're desirable players, but they are the players who have spoken up, who have highlighted these types of issues. So the league has a long way to go to reckon with its choices to what makes a player undesirable. They seem to still have a very unfocused lens.
That's a really good euphemism. Unfocused lens. Yes.
Another topic that you would put in the rundown, and I actually have to defer to you here, is about coaching philosophies. Does calling out your players work? I'm curious. Is there a recent event that I somehow missed in the past week of a coach calling a player out, or is this more in the general sense?
Well, I guess I was just reacting to Rick Tocchet over the last few weeks and what he has been saying about players, and that just made me think about it. And obviously we're talking about the very damaging hockey culture of racism, but it's arguable, but there's also this sort of top-down, coach is always right mentality in hockey that pervades. I just wanted to open up the debate. You know, we've heard today Rick Tocchet say Kito Hirose was called out for having a great attitude and great skill set, but, you know, not being the right level of fitness. What that pertains to, we're not sure, possibly the whole body size thing. You know, Pod Colson was called out. Dakota Joshua was called out by his coach in training camp. And yeah, I'm just curious about that. I've kind of tinted the debate here by saying that there's this sort of machismo to that. Because I do think sometimes it does work, but whether publicly shaming your players is the right approach or not, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, personally, I don't feel it's the right approach. Like, just from a leadership perspective, and I'm, you know, by no means a great leader, but when I have been in leadership positions, my approach has always been to ensure that, one, I'm transparent with a particular individual, and when I have that conversation with them, it's very clear, crystal clear, as to what expectations are and how they occur to me as to meeting those expectations. I feel that that needs to be clearly communicated, clearly conveyed with, hey, here's where you are, or where I feel you are, here's where you are, and here's what I think you need to do to get there. That's between you and me. Now, once you know that, if a question were to come out in a broader sense, the likelihood is you'll hear, hey, yeah, this player, not quite there yet. We've had a conversation. They know what they need to do. And I think they're going to get there. Like, I don't have to tell you squat. Like, to me, I would not be the coach that would call you out. Like, if your fitness wasn't there, I'm not going to call that out.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the interesting thing. I do think there's some nuance to it, because we talk over and over again about how, you know, frustrating it is to watch press conferences with coaches who say nothing. You know, you're asking about fitness of a player, and it's like, oh, they have an upper body injury when they're concussed and unlikely to return. And if you get asked over and over again who isn't meeting expectations at camp, like, you know,
well,
Right.
If a player wasn't meeting expectations, like if I was asked who's not meeting expectations, it would probably take quite a bit for me to go and name a person in a public conversation. Like it would have to be a significant, like, this person has been given X number of chances, but even then it would still be a framed in a positive light. Like I get what you're saying. And you're right. I've probably even said that. I hate how we don't get this type of transparency, but I don't feel from that perspective it should be. Like, if it's injuries, the fact that we can have someone say they have a body injury blows my mind. Yeah. Like, yeah, we've reached this point where if someone's hurt, saying it in a press conference isn't going to go and let the cat out of the bag. The other team knows.
Yeah.
Like, that grapevine has already filled in the blanks. Really, the only ones being kept in the dark are us on the outside.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, you know, a personal trait, that is where I start to become less interested in.
Yeah. Right?
Like a fitness level, if the fitness level isn't there, I might generalize, but it wouldn't be specific. There's a handful of players, you know. Like, I understand there's a game there, but I just feel that calling someone out individually, I know the thought is, oh, it works.
Well,
person it works with, there's another person that doesn't, and it goes the opposite direction. Maybe the best leaders are the ones who can figure those types of people out. But the thing that I feel is most important is that when in doubt and there's no way to be 100% sure, you choose the more respectful approach.
And I do like that as a general approach and philosophy, but, you know, there would be players who would say, you know, like, that worked for me. Like, Dakota Joshua is still in the team, isn't he? Like,
Frankie Corrado talked, you know, quite clearly about Tortorella and how Torts told you how it was. And Frankie is like that. Like, that's the thing is, like, I agree, but I feel like that relationship must be extremely strong to know who and who. But this is where then I feel you start to put yourself as a coach into a position of a discrepancy existing in that you'll name some players, but you won't name others.
Yeah, and you're right about that because, like, how does that look if you are named as a player that's not meeting expectations and you see your teammate that, like, is also struggling not being named? It might start working for you. And there's a clear difference, right, about then being direct and honest, and maybe even you get called out by your teammates or in front of your teammates. Like, I don't love that idea either, but maybe that's works for certain players. But I think there is a big difference to being called out in public and on the media, especially in a market like Vancouver, where that's going to, like, run as, like, you're going to see that in tweets and articles and everything. I mean, I feel like JT takes every bad tweet that everyone has ever sent.
He doesn't read Twitter, does he?
Completely personally. I don't know. He just talks a lot about, like, noise in the media. And for someone who says they never read, like, what people are saying and they just shut out the noise because it's not important, he does seem incredibly upset by what people are saying online. I think that is the hard thing too, is that as a player, you never allow to sort of come back and say, actually, that really upset me when he said that, and I don't think he should have said that. Like, you could.
Oh, that player is soft. That player isn't a real hockey player. Doesn't, like, that's when the cultural issues of the game, you know,
yeah,
get into play.
So while we're not, like, necessarily saying that, like, he shouldn't, Rick Tocchet shouldn't have called out these players specifically, and, like, I do think I agree with you that, like, the general philosophy is not one we sit comfortably with.
No. Oh, man. Hockey.
Hockey.
Hockey, hockey, hockey.
It hasn't even started. Like, the season hasn't even started yet. And we're already exhausted.
Yeah. Speaking of hockey, there is more hockey to come. So the Vancouver Canucks will be taking on the Seattle Kraken out there in Abbey on Wednesday night. That's a preseason game, a neutral site preseason game. And then their final preseason game will be against the Calgary Flames on a Friday. They then open up the season on Wednesday, October 11th at home against the Edmonton Oilers, where Quinn gets a proper, hey, you're our new captain, as opposed to last night-ish, which was your, you know, first game as captain at home type idea. And then they play again in Edmonton on Saturday, October 14th. Why might I be talking about games 2 weeks out? Well, that's because, as is our practice, we typically take a week off where a statutory holiday falls. Now, I do want to acknowledge that we were in a position of having two statutory holidays in a row, and knowing that it would be such a long period of time to record, what should we do? Because we only came to this realization after recording last week, we elected to record this week to let you, our listeners, know of our absence the week out, as opposed to just not being here.
Yeah, and also, I will be in Chicago next weekend, so.
Oh, well.
Man, that's part of it, too.
Just a minor issue.
Honestly, I'm impressed you remembered to say something, so well done. I had already forgotten.
Well, I tattooed it on my hand, and I've been staring at the ink the whole time. But Anna and I will be back in 2 weeks' time to talk about the Vancouver Canucks and how they have looked at the start of the new NHL season, having played Edmonton twice, which I think will be a great barometer as to whether or not we should start setting up our lawn chairs on that proposed parade route that has the team going down. I think the latest one had it start in Stanley Park and just work its way along Georgia Street to the Raj. So
I thought you were going to say, like, start in Stanley Park, go into the ocean.
Maybe 2 weeks after, that's what they'll do. I don't know.
If we're doing fantastical parade routes, why not?
See a third beach type idea and then keep on walking. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you want to take part in the conversation about our show, about hockey, about food, best place to go to is what, Anna?
Discord.io/C4podcast.
That's right, C4 Discord. It's where all the greatest conversations take place, or at least where Anne and I talk to each other about some of the latest news, and then occasionally others chime in. But the hottest channel right now, and has been all off season, has been Nom Nom, because apparently you, our listeners, as well as Anna and I as hosts, like food.
Yeah, we do. Actually, I have some good pictures that I took at brunch today, so maybe I'll post them in Nom Nom after this.
But if you are looking for our back catalog, c4podcast.com, our broken website, will have everything ish. I mean, I was actually having a conversation with someone because they're like, well, you have like 300 some odd episodes, but I can't find like the early ones. And long story there for another show, but they most are there. You can also follow us on social media at the C4 Podcast. And if you have reached this point of the show and you're like, hey, I like what they're doing, Anna and Chris, they deserve to be bought a pint or two. You can go to support.c4podcast.com, and that will send you to Buy Me a Coffee, or Anna, as we call it.
Buy Me a Pint.
And you can chip in a couple of bucks, either as a one-off basis or contribute monthly or yearly, however you see fit. So any final words of wisdom today, Anna?
No, I would encourage everyone to, whether they live in Canada or the US or somewhere else, just to, if you are a supporter of the Canucks as a hockey team, even if you do not live in North America, I would encourage you to engage with what Truth, the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, means and why it's important. So, yeah.
And for me, I simply want to reinforce what I had said earlier. First comes truth, then only may reconciliation take place. So the truth is very important. On behalf of myself, Chris Ally Force, Anna A4Size03, this is the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com with We Out.